Hello. Okay. Scott Carley here.
And Joe Witte here. Did somebody else join us? I guess not yet.
Yeah. So everything's new, and I think we're now recording, so.
Alrighty.
Be advised. Joe, where are you?
I am in Washington, D.C.
I'm
at George Mason University and also doing a little bit of TV work still at News Channel 8.
Okay, excellent. So have you been on these calls before?
Just threw my hat in the ring during your last call.
Okay.
I had seen your website and said, oh, this is probably a good thing for me to learn some good things about. So
good. Well, I'm glad you're able to join us. There's been, I guess we've been going for almost 2 years now.
Oh, really? Yes, okay.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. And
I'm working with Heidi at the Climate Central developing 30-second videos on climate science to test in a small TV market. And see what we get back for results.
Excellent.
And hope to expand from there.
So do you know Dave Jones then?
Sure, I know Dave, right.
Uh-huh. Well, Dave has been part of this on and off. He hasn't been on for a while.
He's probably been busy because he was he took some people up to Greenland for the 8,000 foot deep dig now. And then he was involved in NOAA's project to launch their State of the Climate.
Yes. And I think video in Greenland. Hi, who's joined us?
This is David Blockstein at NCSC.
Oh, hi, David. It's Scott Carley here.
How are you?
And Joe Witte. Louise Huffman from Andrew.
Louise, great. Did you guys get a prompt to ask if you were fine about recording?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
This is the first time we've used this particular configuration, and I wasn't quite sure whether it was doing that anymore. So, good. So we are recording. And I'm not sure how many people are going to join us today. I know Tamara is in Boulder with an NSDL meeting. But I think Mark is free, and, couple of other folks, too, that are usually on here. I'm not sure about Don Dugenhaus, who usually joins us, but I think he's busy at a conference this week.
Yeah, August tends to be a little busy and slow at the same time.
It's true. It's busy in other areas, and we don't get to have the freedom to check in on a call like this. So we'll wait a few more minutes, but not too many, just so that we can keep this short if that's how it plays out. If not, we can go on. I think as Tamara mentioned in her emails, there's at least two things that we could talk a little bit about. The Clean Project, which involves many members of the Climate Literacy Network, had their meetings in Boulder last week, and I can report a little bit on the results of that. And the other thing we worked a little bit on, and people may have done this in with their own groups, is we also worked in a response for the National Research Council's, what's it called? And it was a conceptual framework for science education. We actually, about 2 weeks ago, we did a two-hour telecon trying to pull some results together or some comments together, and those went in yesterday or the day before, I guess. Yeah, they were. Oh, Mark's here, too. Good. Hi, Mark. Scott here.
Hey, Scott.
We're just going to wait a few more minutes because everything is a little new for all of us. And David Blockstein's here, Louise Huffman, and Joe Witte. Those are the names I have. Anyone else? Don't think so. Mark, I was just mentioning what was in Tamara's email just about sort of some of the topics we can talk a little bit about.
Good.
Yeah, obviously, for you.
Is Don on the call?
He's not, and I'm going to guess that Don is at, there's a planetary conference or something like that.
I saw him, he's here in Boulder, and I saw him at the discussion yesterday about the NRC framework, which...
Oh, great. Oh, you were able to sit in on that. Oh, that's good.
I thought he was going to be on the call today, but...
Okay.
I
hadn't heard one way or the other. I just knew that he was busy this week, and... So you can maybe report a little bit about what that meeting was like, too. So should we start? Because it's about 5 after, at least by my clock here. And we may just have a half hour today if that's how it plays out. I guess the first thing I'll talk a little bit about is just, and certainly Mark, since you were also there and a planner, we can talk a little bit about the Clean Project and the review camp that we held last week in Mark's neck of the woods. Joe, do you know Mark and Luis and David?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I know you, Joe. David Blockstein at NCSC. How are you?
Okay. Hi, David.
And Luis is at Andrel. Andrel, Luis, where is that actually located? Where are you actually physically located?
Myself? I'm located in Naperville, Illinois. My office is at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
That's
so
what I was...
I
get it always confused as where you are.
So the office for Andrel is at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
Yeah. And Mark, who could...
Yeah. Mark McCaffrey, University of Colorado at Boulder with CERES, the NOAA Cooperative Institute.
Oh,
and
sure.
You're at George Mason, is that right?
Yes, I'm at George Mason, right,
Great.
And Joe, I'm Scott Carley at, I'm actually in Seattle and I work with the College of Exploration.
Seattle, my first TD market.
In Seattle, okay, good.
I graduated from University of Washington in atmospheric sciences and then stuck around for a master's degree.
Okay.
And started TV at King TV.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that is one of the major TV stations still here after whatever, how many years it is.
Yeah.
A long time.
Yes.
Very good. Well, as I was mentioning, one of the things that many of us on this call have been involved in is a Clean Pathway Project, which is something that's funded by NSF. And our big sort of event in the last, we started work on this project once it got funded in the beginning of January, and our big sort of project or sort of event was the review camp that we held last week, essentially in Mark's office building. It was at CERES in Boulder. And there were 24 of us, I think, Mark.
Yeah.
Two evaluators, so a total of 26 of us, I think, that were there. And we broke up into 6 teams, and each of the teams had 24 sort of pre-reviewed learning resources. And we've talked about this, of course, on the call over the last couple of months. So what we did then, each of those teams went through their 24 resources, and there were 4 people with a fairly diverse background. Usually there was at least one scientist and a couple of educators. And we then went through the resources that had been assigned to us. And as I said, there were 24 each. And over basically 2.5 days, we reviewed them quite intensely, giving them another real solid look. And I actually pulled this stuff up, so I'll just do it and give you a little sense of what came out of those resources or those reviews. They were quite intensive. We budgeted on average about 35 minutes, so I think in the end most groups were able to do them much more quickly than that. And these were already sort of pre-screened, so in many ways we could move fairly quickly through them. I could talk a little bit more of the process if people are actually interested in that, but just to sort of give you the final wrap-up, of those resources we had, I can't quite remember the full number. I think it was something like 144. And of those 144, 91 went through, and all their annotations, which will be something that people will be able to see on the public website in about 2 or 3 months. But 91 of those passed all the way through. We had another 18 that needed a little bit more review by the editorial board, so there's another 18, and then another 8, which what we just said passed review, which basically means that there needs to be some annotation written for those. 32 of those ones that had already gone through 2 screenings, 32 of those actually failed for interesting reasons. And I think from some of us who were involved in the initial review process, it was kind of interesting that that 32 of them failed, but that's why we actually did the review process, is we actually had more eyes and with different kinds of experience to look at these things. Mark, is there anything else you want to add? I was just trying to do a real brief summary of that.
Yeah, I think that one of the potentially relevant outcomes of the effort for the broader community is that we've developed and refined this review criteria.
Right.
In effect, kind of set the standard of what a clean resource needs to look like in terms of scientific accuracy, and at least for this first round, we were looking at online learning activities. We might move into other online resources that could be dressed up with pedagogical wrapping and so forth. But at this stage, we wanted to get a sense of what's out there in terms of high-quality learning activities. And ease of use was also one of the criteria. We have looked at literally thousands of resources between all the different resource collectors, and then, you know, refined that down to 400 or so resources, and then the 140 that we actually tackled at the camp. So what we're finding is that there's not a lot of great materials out there. At the same time, there are very good resources that need to be enhanced, if you will, with that pedagogy or activity. The idea of activity sheets is one idea that we've been discussing at some length. So the project is a three-year project, and we're just a little over 6 months into this, so we've got some more time to flesh things out. But websites like the NASA, climate.nasa.gov website, that have all sorts of resources, but they don't have any guidance for teachers of how they could make use of this in the classroom. Likewise, there's a very great website that the National Academies has put together on energy, what you need to know about energy, and some of the teachers that we work with could very easily put together some teacher tips or activity sheets on how this could, these resources could be used in a classroom, so I think there's a lot of potential there. But that's all I could add to the overall summation of the project and the review camp.
Mark, this is David Blockstein. Could you, and first thank you for that and for all your work and organizing that. Could you say, I guess he didn't like that. in terms of, and by the way, for future calls, I think this function can actually be turned off whoever sets up the call.
I'll look into that.
But I'm wondering if you can, that you did pass on, if you could describe anything in terms of characteristics of types of audience, K-12, what kind of content, how much of this was fundamental climate science, how much was solutions-oriented, things like that might be interesting, just to give a better sense of what this material is.
And has the background person been asked to mute, by the way?
No, not yet. Yeah, somebody's got some in the background. It would be helpful if you could mute and just pop in when you need to. Getting so whoever that was, did it. Thank you. Well,
Mark, did you hear the question?
I'm sorry, my wife just called, and I have an emergency, so could you repeat the question?
Are you okay to stay on, though?
Yeah.
Okay. I was asking you if you could describe out of the 91 that you did agree to include, if you could say anything in terms of the characteristics of them, such as the audience, educational level, the focus in terms of how many of them were really fundamental science and how many were more solutions-oriented, things like that. Might be interesting to give us a sense of what's out there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it, because we have the seven essential principles plus the guiding principle, and then we have all the sort of fundamental concepts nested down under there, that
right.
we ended up with a pretty good representation of a little bit of everything, and including, because our scope of our audience are middle school to undergraduate level, 6th to 16 grades, there's a good representation of that range as well, which means that it's pretty thin all the way across. And I think one thing that surprised me personally was that the focus on how we know that human activities are contributing to climate change, there were very, very few resources around that. It seems to be a gap. And Arnold Bloom, who, David, you know from the CAMEL project, was on my team, and we've already started to flush out some ideas on an activity using carbon isotopes, where the students would come in and access data on the ratio of carbon 12 to 13 that can help people understand, probably mainly at the undergraduate or AP high school level, how we know that there's a human signature on the increase of greenhouse gas of CO2 concentrations. So, like I say, this is a three-year project, and this 100 or so resources that will be part of the first release of the collection will be fairly thin, and so we have some sense of where the gaps are that need to be filled. But you know, over the 3 years of the project, we're aiming to have at least 500 high-quality resources, so that we can really fill some of those thin spots.
Mark, I have some of the stats from those 91, and I can maybe read them out to folks. We had 34 matches for the first climate literacy thing that humans... Well, no, sorry, this is the guiding principle. Humans can take action. The first guiding principle, sun is a primary energy source, is 17 matches. Second is climate is complex, 38 matches. And there's duplicates here, I should mention, so it's not number one. Life affects climate. Climate affects life, 25 matches. Climate is variable, 40 matches. Our understanding of climate, 46 matches. Humans affect climate, 24 matches. And climate change has consequences, 34. And on the energy side, our first principle was, or A principle, as we called it, principle A, energy drives the Earth system, 2 matches. B, primary energy sources, both renewable and non-renewable, 19 matches. Impacts of energy use, 22nd matches. Energy distribution costs, 4 matches. Energy access and equity, 9 matches. Decarbonization challenges, 19 matches. So those are the 91. Now, there, as I mentioned before, there were a couple of other categories there that will take probably add, I'm going to guess, maybe 10 or even 20 more to this list. That gives you a sense that, you know, other than the energy drives the Earth system under energy, and that's actually basically the same as the energy, the first climate literacy principle, the sun is a source of, prime source of energy, which is 17 matches. I would say there's a fairly even distribution, but thin, as Mark said, distribution of these resources over the various categories. So that gives you a little sense of it. The other thing that I noticed in my group, and Mark sort of alluded to it, I think all of us, as we went through them, were itching to rewrite them. We had to stop ourselves from doing that. It was very tempting to, in some ways, save resources that we really liked, but we had to mark down because there was, perhaps a serious pedagogical problem that we felt we could... If we rewrote it, we could make it better, but our mandate certainly last week was not to be doing any of that rewriting. So I think even of the 30-plus that we had to fail last week, we may be able to, either on our own by activity sheets, as Mark mentioned, or actually going back to the individual developers, we may be able to also bring those into the collection. Again, as Mark said, that we still have 2.5 years to do this. The other point I want to make, and we've said it before, but I just want to make sure it's very clear, these particular resources that we looked at were standalone online resources meant to only take 1 to maybe 4 or 5 classroom periods. These were not things like a visualization or just a data set or even a research article. If there wasn't a learning activity associated with it, we did not include it at this time, but those are sort of being held in what we call holding tanks, and those are things that we will look at in the future.
Scott and Mark, this is Louise. I'm just curious, will you be letting people know that submitted activities to this process, how their activities ended up?
I'll leave that to Mark, I think.
We'll have to think that through logistically.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got so many that were suggested. But I think your point is good, that we need to acknowledge to those who made a special effort to submit their resources, we should make the effort to kind of close the loop and get back to them. There were a number of resources in the team that I was working with that we kicked back to the editorial team, and they were resources where we knew the developers and felt like there were some minor things that needed to be changed to really bring it up to speed or to be able to meet the sort of clean standard, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But and certainly with those, we'll be getting back to the developer. But did you have any particular resources in mind?
Well, a couple of things come to mind. We did submit a couple of activities that I'd be curious about, but we're also in the process of developing a really comprehensive set of resources right now. And, you know, I'd like to know, you know, as we develop these, we'd like to make sure we've got the parts in that would make these fit your criteria, I guess.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to talk to Jean?
I haven't yet. We have a call later this week, but I haven't yet.
Yeah.
Talked.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been great if you'd been able to attend, but I think Jean now has a really good sense of the process and you know what we're looking for. You know, I obviously think very highly of Andrill products and all the great stuff you guys have been doing, so I don't really worry about what all you put together. As you know, we're not looking for big, huge modules. We're looking for more bite-sized chunks, if you will.
Right. Yeah. We submitted individual activities, you know, because we knew that's what you were looking for. So the ones that I submitted matter of fact, we broke them apart on the website so that you could download them as one activity specifically for that submission. So.
Right. So, yeah, just I'll talk to Anna Gold because she's still the coordinator of all the resources and so forth, and we'll get back to you in terms of where things stand with the Andrill resources in particular.
Okay, because we're going to be field testing the resources that we're currently writing the end of September. So, you know, it'd be good to get that feedback if we could before these get to that point.
Yeah, very good. So, yeah, we'll be in touch with you offline on that.
Right. Any other questions or comments around the clean review camp last week? I'm sure we'll talk more about this as time goes on.
I have new business when you're ready, Scott.
Yeah, I guess the one before to leave clean, This is David. I just do want to reinforce, I think, Luis's question and point that I think that it will be valuable for CLEAN to make available to the climate education community the criteria and sort of maybe turn that into guidelines.
Absolutely.
As to, you know, what constitutes a high-quality curricular resource, something like that?
We definitely intend to do that. We have been asked by the NASA Global Climate Change Education Community, which, of course, there's 40-some projects funded by NASA, to develop new materials and so forth. And they're very, very interested in these guidelines and standards.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be putting that together over the next month or so.
Yeah.
And then getting that out to the broader community.
Really good.
Yeah.
And I guess the one other thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, we did a lot of training ahead of time to make sure that the people coming to the camp were well prepared, and it was kind of new territory for a lot of us. We've done some reviewing in the past. Of course, the collectors have been going through their own review process. But to have people together in these small teams, and there was a lot of diversity within each team. You know, my team had Arnold Bloom, who's got a whole book on global climate change education for the undergraduate students, and then we had a middle school teacher who's done a lot of work around renewable energy, and then myself and Jeff Lockwood, who's done a lot of work around inquiry-based learning in high school and middle schools. So I just was very, very pleased at how that kind of diverse team could learn from each other and, you know, talk through the issues. I think it was really very rich, and that we really need to try to capture some of the aspects of that, because it was quite effective and you know, obviously fairly time consuming. But in the future, things should go much quicker as long as we stay away from developing, you know, new activity sheets or rewriting things. But anyhow.
Yeah, Mark, my team was very similar. We had quite a diverse group, and it was very interesting how that prompted the discussions that we had. It was very good. I think it worked very well. And I think everyone agreed with that, all the other teams, too, really quite enjoyed the process. It was tiring, but it was enjoyable to work together like that. Any other comments around the review camp? I'm sure we'll probably talk more about this. I guess what I can say is that we will be putting the review criteria out there probably within the next month or so. And our goal is to start doing a version of the public website, which will show all the annotations and all that. I think it's actually beginning of October, with the plan that a sort of a final version of that is ready at the beginning of November for this NFCL meeting that we wanted. That's where that is. I'm still getting a bit of screeching from one member here. I'm not sure what's happening there.
Oh,
Don,
sorry. I thought we were on mute. I am.
Is it you, Don?
The screeching was here. Sorry about that. I'm actually in the a very busy Apple store trying to get my computer well again.
Multitasking.
There's a story there.
I did have my phone muted for a little while, but other things going on there. Sorry.
Yeah, not a problem. Don, do you want to sort of talk a little bit about the NRC stuff and maybe as much as you can share about what the process has been in the last couple of days?
Yeah. So we met for a day and a half on almost 2 days, I guess.
This is the Earth and Space Science folks.
This is the Earth and Space Science design team for the frameworks for national science education developed by the NRC committee to that end, and we are the Earth and Space Science folks. So the five of us, which is myself, Michael Y. Session, Dennis Schatz, Scott Linneman, and Eric Pyle, met in conjunction with the Cosmos in the Classroom meeting that is actually still going on in Boulder, which is a joint meeting of Astronomical Society of the Pacific and GSA, though almost all ASP as near as I could tell. And so we looked at the comments that got in early, because yesterday was actually the close of comments, and we had the Climate Literacy Network's comments, we had comments from folks at NOAA, draft comments from National Association of Geoscience Teachers, National Marine Educators Association, and about 450 responses to the survey. We pored over those. We also did really the first sort of side-by-side comparison of what we had submitted back in June and what came out in July, and we're fairly surprised by the addition of about 20% more text than what we had included in the draft, and some changes, some deletions and things that really surprised us, a lot of which we're going to advocate that they undo, and a lot of additions which we found inappropriate. And discussion, for example, of continental drift instead of seafloor spreading, when we never use the term continental drift. Not so relevant for this group, but just to let you know, we are also advocating, we're going to suggest that since everything in Chapter 3 is some sort of spin-off of things that are in Chapter 7, that Chapter 3, that the committee considered dropping Chapter 3, in large part because some of it was summarized in a way that changes the meaning of some of the ideas. And it, in looking at the comments, a lot of people were confused by inconsistencies between Chapter 3 and Chapter 7 and found it unnecessary. And that will also place the cross-cutting elements and practices before the core scientific ideas, and everyone on our design team agreed that gave more appropriate emphasis to the cross-cutting elements and practices of science.
Good.
So we did find the comments from the various groups that I mentioned earlier very helpful, and are taking those into consideration and are plugging actually quite a few of them in fairly directly. So that's the short version.
That's great, Don. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was a very good meeting. It was very productive.
Good, good. Well, it sounds like you have quite a bit to work with. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we anticipate there were 450 comments submitted by Saturday, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I know our normal one...
Hundreds and hundreds more have come in the last couple of days.
Exactly.
We don't know what those numbers are. We do know that there did... See, I shouldn't say we know. We saw... We had an earlier set of comments of about 150 that had come in by sometime last week, and then we looked at the 450 that came in by the weekend, the total of 450, and we saw between those original 150 and the 450 a big uptick in people concerned about evolution and the age of the Earth, and some pretty interesting comments there, which will probably have no effect on what actually gets published, but they were interesting to read.
<I'm> sure.
So, any questions?
Yeah. I guess I can just mention, just so it's clear to folks, we had a telecon on this issue 2 weeks ago. In fact, Don was part of that, of course. and a set of comments that are actually on the website were notes were put together right after that. And up until, what, Friday, I think we refined them a little bit, and then there was some more refinement on Saturday and Sunday. And so there were actually formal comments submitted through the review, the survey review. And I think Tamara has actually put the final set that went into to the gets up on our website.
Hold on just one sec. I've got to talk to a genius here.
Go for it, Don. So anyway, at least our comments did get in, and obviously it sounds like Don and that group was able to review them for the edits of the document conceptual plan. Don, I wonder if you could put yourself on mute again.
Oh, sorry, I thought I did. Sorry, but I'm back.
You're stuck getting about your machine.
I'm done talking to the genius. We're all set here. So.
Okay, that's great. Thanks for this, Don. Appreciate it.
So anyway, I were there any questions for me? I'll actually be able to step out to a quieter place now.
Good. Thomas, what? Did we cover everything 2 weeks ago?
I guess so. And it was a helpful conversation, so.
Yeah.
And the notes were helpful for the committee.
Good.
And there was nothing where members of the committee looked at it and thought, oh, pshaw, or anything like that.
Anything really stupid.
Right.
Good.
And we had a session on it. We had a plenary session on it with, I think, between 80 and 100 people, which seemed to be well received and provided us some more input.
Excellent. So, Don, what are the next steps for the document?
Well, the next steps are we are trying to, we've each taken possession of one of the four core ideas with Michael floating around between the four, and are to plug in the comments that we thought made sense to plug in and pay attention to, you know, suggestions about what to change, and we'll be working over email and conference call and things like that for. I'm not sure, actually, if we know what our next deadline is. We know that they want things to happen fairly quickly.
So it's literally within the next month or so?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Now, do you know if there's going to be another review period for sort of the final version or something like that?
I haven't heard that. I don't know.
We don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any comments raised about the public process? I don't know whether that came to you or not. It was a pretty short time.
Yeah, it was a pretty short time frame. That was raised in various places, and the National Academy thought that they were being generous by offering 3 weeks. They're unaccustomed to putting out so public about the things they produce. You know, the typical framework is they recruit experts in whatever discipline it is that they're or area that they're working on, and it's a very, very private, shrouded process.
Right.
And they were made very uncomfortable by getting hundreds of comments that told them that things were wrong.
Yeah.
That is not standard National Academy or National Research Council practice to get that sort of stuff. So they really apparently did think that it was quite generous to give 3 weeks. Didn't seem to register that it's not only 3 weeks, but 3 weeks in the middle of the summer when, you know, particularly earth science folks are out in the field and yada, yada, yada. So, and there were also some concerns raised in the meeting in the plenary session about not having actual classroom teachers involved in the process. And our response to that was, well, we didn't really have anything to say about how the people were selected, but there will be input for teachers in the actual development of the standards.
Okay.
And that too is an important issue, is that people confuse the document
right.
that is drafted now for standards, which it isn't, but will yeah. hopefully lead to. So,
good.
Other questions, comments?
Any other questions?
Now that I'm in a place where I can actually hear you.
Actually hear us. Well, that was a pretty good summary, Don. Thanks. Are there any other comments? I don't know whether we didn't start the meeting with sort of going around and indicating any new stuff that's come up. I don't know whether there's anyone has some news they want to present to everyone.
I have one question and
go
update. This is Doug Cohen.
Go for it.
So I'm not even sure who's here, but I'm glad that I got on to hear some of these updates. Doug Cohen in between New Jersey and New Mexico right now, New Mexico. I have a question of who knows this group in NASA, Lawrence Friedel's Applied Science Group, because I've learned of their program called DEVELOP, which is a student internship program, and I'm invited into D.C. next week to see student presentations. Relative to this update of our network, which is the Youth Climate Literacy Media Team, which we brought a delegation of graduate students and young professionals to ESIP in January, some of you know, and piloted a youth media team to create vignettes of public engagement of climate and earth science findings and interpreted by scientists, which was a very successful beginning phase of a youth media team launch, and now NASA is interested in that. But this was new to me, his group and DEVELOP. And who knows anything or know about it?
I haven't seen anything.
Nope, I know nothing.
Yeah, I'm looking at their website right now, and I'm not familiar with the group, but they focus a lot on remote sensing and Earth-observing satellites. We'd look forward to hearing how your meeting goes, Doug, because I think that one of the people at our clean conference last week, Laura Faye Tannenbaum, is with NASA JPL in Pasadena,
yep.
California, and she's helped develop the climate.nasa.gov website, which is a real treasure trove of good data and information, but it doesn't have much in the way of pedagogy or things that young people can do to better understand the data. So there may be ways that NASA DEVELOP could work with us and the
yeah.
climate website at NASA to make all that information more accessible to students.
So this is an example, and I'll be happy to follow up with a report of progress. The high-class networking of the network, we got to this gentleman at NASA through ESIP, and Carol Meyer was asked by him about the youth media team from the winter meeting, and so that it was just that relay of having member Scott having and Mark having decided to do that demonstration
yeah.
delegation just out of our conversations in the fall on long-term clean. Here we are at the next step of a substantial mm-hmm. program in NASA.
Yeah, I love it.
This is David Blockstein at NCSC. We have a proposal into NASA for the next round of climate education funding to work with Laura and her team at NASAClimate.gov to do exactly that in terms of trying to develop some pedagogically relevant materials, mostly aimed at the undergraduate education, but not entirely.
Great.
Good. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Hi, Lynn. We heard you bump in. What's going on for you, Lynn? Is there anything to report? We just sort of we talked about some other things, and then we'll come back to sort of our news section.
Yeah, I'm so sorry I missed so much. I'm at UC Boulder now, University of Colorado, and I got this visiting scholar position, and it's with Diane McKnight, and she's at INSTAR, and she's got a lot of NSF funding to do this outreach on long-term environmental research on ecosystems, and she wanted to do more outreach on climate, like public outreach and education. So I was telling her about the Climate Literacy Network, and she actually wasn't aware of it. And so what I'm doing here is plugging, you know, she has, there's some funding, and there'll be a coordinator. So the idea is to try and coordinate a lot of what the Climate Literacy Network people here in Boulder are doing, and work with Diane McKnight, and to do a program in the Boulder schools. And it would start with this one film. I don't know if everyone has seen the Dreaming in Green film, but it's the film that I produced where the girls saved their school $53,000 in energy costs. And if you haven't seen it, it's on the web.
Just one in Florida? Lynn, that was the one in Florida, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, that's right. They were the ones in Florida, right.
Right.
And so we have some teachers here who are taking the curriculum that inspired those girls, which is an energy curriculum put together by Bertha Vasquez, who's she won the Environmental Teacher of the Year from the National Environmental Education Foundation, NEEF. And so she has said that we can just take her curriculum, this energy curriculum, and adapt it to the Colorado standards and then put it up on the Internet so teachers can use it as a PowerPoint and learn about energy, and then have the motivational piece be this story about the girls who saved their schools $53,000 in energy costs, and try and get this model in schools around Boulder, Denver, and then we've been talking to the governor's office, and they have a carbon reduction campaign out of the governor's office.
Uh-huh.
And so we're hoping that they'll put some of their people behind this. And I'm just basically just, you know, I'll be meeting with Mark McCaffrey on Thursday, and Tamara's here now, and Sue Burrell. And so I'm just going to try and coordinate this through a student environmental group that can do outreach, and the Alliance for Sustainable Colorado, and the Colorado Environmental Education Association, and whatever groups are wanting to, you know, sign on and help get this out into the schools. So we figure if Colorado as a state could significantly reduce its CO2 emissions through conservation education. I don't know if this is, you know, it's like we're going to give the kids a survey before and then after and see if it raises their awareness and whether it makes them more conservation minded.
That's great.
Yeah. So
Lynn, comment back, Lynn. This is Doug. I had a meeting yesterday with ACE, Alliance for Climate Education in Denver, that you may know of. They opened a new office there.
Yeah.
So that young woman and her partner would be great links for what you're doing. And relative to the survey you just mentioned, it bears on a couple of other geographies where we're doing community-based survey for schools and families pre- and post-interventions on education for energy conservation.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's developed already, I'd be very interested in it. And if it's not yet developed, I'm wondering how you're going to develop that survey.
Mm-hmm. We're just going to do a simple questionnaire. But, you know, if that's something you want, if you're working on it, we should just do it together.
I'm also in the early stages of survey development,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just interested in that output. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and I'll talk to Tamara and Mark about this, too, because maybe it's something the Climate Literacy Network wants to get more involved in.
Yeah.
So if anyone has any other contacts, I'm sure that Mark knows pretty much everybody, Mark and Susan Burr. So, but if anyone has other contacts in Colorado, just send them on.
That's wonderful, Lynn. I love the idea of developing this almost like a statewide program. I'm guessing the stuff that you did in Florida was really just based in that school, but this is kind of broadening it a little bit more. So that's great.
Yeah, the movies are starting to be shown around Florida, but it's like they were shown at the Fort Lauderdale Science Museum at a big conference for the science museum personnel at the other science museums in the state. And I don't know how widely they're actually being used, and that's something I have to figure out how to track.
Yeah.
Hey, Lynn, this is Louise. Congratulations on all of that. It sounds like a great project. And tell Diane I said hi.
Okay. Hi, Louise. Are you coming out here at all?
I don't have any plans to right now. We're pretty busy with our next round of climate change summits, professional development workshops start next month, and our next summit with kids is March 5th, so we've got a lot to get together before then, so I'm kind of up to my eyeballs with that right now.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Lynn. This is Joe Whitty, and is that a niece contact you have?
Is what?
Is that niece you're working with, or the person
you mean
is
here?
Working with?
No, oh. Here. Well, niece has put the films, the trailer, on their website, and they have links.
Okay.
Niece has put a lot of links to their various programs. They've linked to youngvoicesonclimatechange.com, and so they're trying to get the films out. And ACE, I think you know, ACE actually licensed the. All the films, so they could put the films directly on their website. They gave us a nice contribution for that. And National Wildlife Federation is linked to them. And any of these groups that are trying to do climate education, I'm encouraging them to at least put the trailer up and link to the films. Because I did these films so they'll be useful for climate educators as the motivational, inspirational piece, because they're
right.
Inspiring and empowering and positive instead of, depressing.
Right.
So anyone who's on the call, please, I really hope you'll use these in your, programs. If you're doing teacher training or, kids groups, even if it's just they're only 4 minutes each, so you can fit them into pretty much any program. And if any of you are writing grant proposals and want to integrate these as part of, the inspiration piece, the, empowerment piece, that's what they're there for.
Excellent. All right, great. This is Joe. I've got to bow out for another conference call. So bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye, Joe.
So is that the cue for the rest of us?
David, I wanted to announce one other project that we have now been not yet funded, but recommended by NSF for program officer for funding, and we still have to be approved through the grants office. But it is to create what we are calling an online clearinghouse for education and networking / oil interdisciplinary learning. And if you're real quick, you will have caught that the acronym is Ocean Oil.
Yes.
And the idea is that starting in just a couple of weeks when people get back to their campuses, that probably everybody who's teaching about the environment is going to be doing something about teaching about the catastrophe in the Gulf of Mexico. And so we are... assuming we get the grant, which is, I think, about 99% at this point, we will be using our Encyclopedia of the Earth to create a special section of resources about what has happened, what is happening, what the broader questions are, and so one part will be just a resource center focused in on the Gulf and the oil catastrophe, and then secondly will be a community-generated set of curricular resources for people who are teaching about the Gulf and the situation. And so, if people have developed presentations, if they have developed or are developing lab exercises, inquiry-based educational materials, curricular units. We don't expect there'll be full classes, but we expect that a lot of things will be being developed, and rather than having everybody work on their own independently and scramble in the same way, that we thought that it would be more effective to have people trying to scramble together, essentially. And so our intention, since we are using the Encyclopedia of the Earth, is to at least have the basis of this up in a matter of weeks, and we'll be encouraging, inviting people to contribute material starting in probably about 3 weeks.
Well, that's great, David. This is Scott Carley here, and I can also mention that the College of Exploration that I work with, we're doing a program that actually is funded already, for sure, through the NOAA Office of Ocean Exploration. We're running a online web conference from October the 11th to the 29th, and it's called Lessons from the Deep, Exploring the Gulf of Mexico's Deep Sea Ecosystems Educational Material Collection. And so,
oh, fabulous.
So it's absolutely the same area, and we obviously should talk to make sure that we support each other as we do this.
We can certainly help to drive traffic towards that conference.
That would be great, and we can talk offline a little bit about that. We're just in the process of formulating that, but this is we do these web conferences about two or three times a year with the NOAA Office of Ocean Exploration and Research, and we basically shifted the one that we were going to do in the fall to this more timely one. So as you said, many groups are doing that. Some of us are in a position where we can turn a little bit quickly and be able to offer this kind of stuff. And I suspect what will happen over that is there'll be a series, and just based on what we've done in the past, there'll be a series of sort of PowerPoints or sort of presentations on that, and then encourage teachers to ask questions of scientists and to start to identify resources that they're familiar with, and this becomes quite a lively activity. It's done asynchronously, so it's not something that you have to be on for a particular period of time, but it'll be available from the 11th to the 29th of October. So if people want to find out a little bit more about that, they can go on to the College of Exploration website, which is www.oexploration.org. And I can tell you right now, there's not much there. We have, other than the information I just gave you, we actually don't have any further information on it because it's just being formulated. But you can at least sign up for it in the next week or two to get notification. So yes, the oil spill stuff is extraordinarily important. How it will be obviously talking about how this relates to climate change too.
So. Yeah. There's a film that I'm going to be working on as soon as I get funding for it. And there's this, I don't know if you've read about this, this girl, she's 13 years old, Olivia, and she's been getting a lot of publicity because she was so concerned about the oil spill. At first, when she saw the pictures of the oiled bird, she just sat down and cried for a week, and then she thought she had to do something. So she started drawing pictures of these birds and selling them for $100 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started sending the money to Audubon because they were cleaning up the oiled birds. And she's raised nearly $200,000 now for Audubon. And she's incredibly articulate. And she doesn't just talk about, oh, I'm drawing pictures so they can clean the birds. She talks about the whole oil economy and how it's our reliance on oil and how we need to have cleaner, other fuels. And so as far as like a four-minute lead-in to any kind of program, this might really be nice.
That's great, Lynn. Well, I'll check back with you about that.
Yeah, because maybe if you're writing these grants, maybe this is something that could just be written into it. So we could get, because it takes me about 10 days to make the film after I've shot it, so I could have it in a month.
That would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll check back with some of my colleagues, too, and that may be something that we could include into this webcast or web conference.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent.
Yeah. Well, David, have you written your proposal yet?
Yeah, we're this is one of these things where there's a budget cap and a time cap, and it will give you the benefit of having a very short turnaround. So yeah, so we're done with all of that, but otherwise would love to try to incorporate that into it.
You know, I talked to Marlene Kaplan, and she was saying that there's a grant that's just coming out or came out that she said I should apply for, that I should find partners for with the film. And so I'm actually looking for, you know, some, you know, partners on this project. So if you see that it could fold into yours, I know that they're interested at that NOAA Education,
yep.
the next NOAA Education grant. So just...
Excellent.
Can I give, you know, I have a new phone number. Could I just give it to you all now? Or do you want me to email it?
It will be recorded, Lynn. That's the only thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we all recorded. You may not want to do that.
Okay, I'll email it through the network then.
Excellent. That would be great. Thanks, Lynn. Okay. Do want to be in touch very shortly.
Okay.
So, folks, I have the top of the hour right now, a little bit past. Shall we call this a day and reconvene next week?
Call it a good day.
Sure. Thanks.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, everyone. And we'll
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Very, very good.